You're listening to Rendezvous with the Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rendezvous with a Writer, where readers and writers meet.
And story is everything.
We're your hosts tonight, Jim and Bobby Bell.
And we're so delighted that you're with us again this week.
We are.
Yeah. So, Jim, what's going on?
What's going on? Buckaroo Bookshop. Santa Clarita Cowboy Festival, April 22nd and 23rd. We'll be hosting the Buckaroo Bookshop again. We've been doing this since 2009, except for a three-year hiatus due to COVID. We're back in action.
We're back.
It's going to be in downtown Newhall. They'll walk off several streets. It's going to be a neat program. And we've got about 16 authors. They're going to be there with their books, signing them, talking about them. It's going to be what a thing. And we mentioned a few authors last week, and you have a few more to talk
about. We have a few more to mention tonight. So who's the first one?
Who's the first one? Jim Meals, who kind of goes like...
He writes also under James Clay. And this is one of his very latest books, Stalking the Dragon. And he'll be with us on Saturday. And he's also going to be part of a panel discussion. And then who's next?
Who's next? Mark Jackson.
We forgot Mark last week. We're so sorry, Mark C. Jackson, who's been a guest on Rendezvous with a Writer. This is the third book in a trilogy, Blue Rivers of Heaven. And he's also with us Saturday only and also going to be on a writer's panel. Okay. And we can't wait to actually meet you, Mark, face to face. We're looking forward to it. Who's next?
Bruce. Civilly.
Yes. Bruce is also somebody we'll be meeting for the first time, and he wrote this really, really interesting book called The Last Stage, Wyatt Earp, the life he lived and the death he imagined. I can't wait. I just got this in the mail a couple days ago, and I can't wait to get into it. And he will also be on a writer's panel, I think, on Sunday. He's with us the whole weekend.
Very good. Next. David DeHaas.
And this is a co-write with Don Chuppet. I hope I said that name right. This is another book about the Earps. This one, The Earps Invade Southern California, Bootlegging Los Angeles, Santa Monica, and the Old Soldier's Home. And another book I can't wait to get into.
That should be a lot of fun,
He's going
right?
to be a lot of fun. He's with us the whole weekend.
Okay. Dale Howison.
Yes. This is The Survival of Margaret Thomas by Dale Howison. Now, if you live in the Los Angeles area, Dale is the owner of the bookstore Dark Delicacies, a really cool place. And he's going to be with us Sunday just until 2 o'clock. He has something going on, I think, back in his store later that day. This was, I think, his first book and critically acclaimed and unbelievable. So we are looking forward to hosting him for the first time. And let's see, do you want to ask me about the library?
Well, you're going to talk about the library.
I am going to talk about the library.
Old Town Newhall Library, just the other end of the street. New library, just been there a few years. Mm-hmm. It's a great place. And we're going to have several demonstrations, several panel discussions
and presentations
from the authors who are going to be at the Buckaroo Bookshop.
Right.
And you're going to kind of cover a little of that, right?
Right. Each day, starting at 11 o'clock in the morning, and then another presentation at noon, at 1, at 2, the final one at 3. We have presentations planned for Saturday and Sunday. And if you want to find out the details, if you would go to our Rendezvous with a Writer Out West Facebook page. I am now posting every day, kind of a countdown. And there's also an event. And if you click on the event, you'll see the list of authors, what days they're with us, as well as the programs. The two programs I'm going to just mention again tonight is this Saturday at 2 o'clock, the discussion Tricks of the Trade, What Inspires a Western Writer to Write? What compelled each writer to put words to paper? Was it a book that they read or a place visited? Did a cowboy song, piece of Western art, or a movie grab their imagination? Author Katie Ryan will moderate a panel of writers, including Mark C. Jackson, David D. Haas, and Jim Meals, who writes as James Clay. Each panelist is going to reveal their backstories and provide tips for new writers. On Sunday at 1 o'clock, we have again at the Old Town Newhall Library, New Westerns and Their Future. Is there a future? Is the Western still relevant? What lies ahead for the Western genre on paper and on screen? Why is the Western still important? Or is it? What challenges do Western writers, screenwriters, and filmmakers face today? Author, screenwriter, and film historian C. Courtney Joyner, his friends, leads a panel of Western writers, including J.R. Sanders, Bill Wilbur, and Bruce Sively, talking about one of today's hot topics. We can't wait, and we really hope that you'll come out and join us. Jim, where can listeners find out more about the festival?
You'll be a lot of fun, folks. A lot of fun. Check out www.cowboyfestival.org. Cowboyfestival.org. It's the city's website. It'll give you all the information and everything that's going on.
Right. All of the other performers, all the vendors, all the activities, and Peach Cobbler, we understand, comes back.
It's coming back.
So thank you for letting us chat a moment about the Buckaroo Bookshop. And now, Jim, on to tonight's guest.
Special guest, Martha Burns.
Martha Burns is with us tonight. Martha, thank you for being patient while we talk about this event.
It sounds fascinating. It sounds like a lot of fun.
So tell us a little bit about Martha.
Well, we have a little info here. Martha Burns grew up in New Mexico. She's a native, where she earned a degree in mathematics before heading off to Hawaii, where she became a CPA. Later, in New Jersey, she earned a doctorate of letters from Drew University. It was there that she discovered the works of William Maxwell, who said, "A writer is a reader who is moved to emulation." And she decided she wanted to be a writer. Burns won the Faulkner Wisdom Gold Medal for short story. She and her husband have two grown daughters and three grandsons, and they split their time between Santa Fe and La Luz in New Mexico.
Welcome, Martha. We're holding up her book that we'll be talking about tonight, a recently named finalist, and we're going to have Martha tell you about that, Blind Eye. And we couldn't put it down, could we?
No.
Another riveting read from page one to the very end.
Yeah, my page 90. I can't remember.
Oh my goodness. Moments where your heart's racing or where you feel kind of a blush almost of embarrassment as we read the story and the tribulations of the main character, and we feel so in tune to what Martha is writing about, as though you are a participant in this story, right?
Yeah.
So Martha, welcome. And why don't you tell us a little bit more about yourself and maybe a little bit about your writing history? How'd you get started writing?
Well, I have been actually writing for a long time, even though I've got that background that's completely different from the writing world. And I decided at one point when we were living in New Jersey, even though I was still working like in finance, I just need to go back and study the humanities. Mm-hmm. And as I was studying the humanities and then that quote you read by William Maxwell, I just developed this this desire to write and to, you know, to dig into what I was reading. I wanted to become well-read and so forth. But that's when it really started. And that was back right around 2000. And this desire to really, you know, try my hand at it.
Very good. Good.
Tell us. No, go ahead. I can tell. Saying, no, what, you go ahead.
What was, what was the inspiration for the story?
For Blind Eye.
Well, you know, I started writing this story a long time ago. I started writing it. I was trying to think, probably in 2012, and I've been writing other things, and I really love to write short story and so forth. But I was had recently moved back, my husband and I, to New Mexico, and I was raised in Albuquerque, and my husband was raised in another part of the state. But when we moved back to this little ranching village, kind of a remote area in the Sacramento Mountains in southern New Mexico. And it was completely different growing up in any or living in any place I lived. And I just became aware of differences about living in a rural or ranching area. And there was an underlying story that inspired my novel is not based on actual events, but I would like to say it's inspired by actual events. And there was a story that was much in the air that people talked about. You would go someplace, you know, with friends or go to work or something like that, and people would be talking about this underlying story of a murder of a young boy who murdered his family on a ranch in New Mexico. And I decided I wanted to dig into that story. I wasn't there at the time of the story. It was a couple of years before we moved back to New Mexico. But I started doing a lot of research and trying, you know, just the craft of writing, trying to figure out how I would be able to tell this story. So that was the inspiration for it. It was a long time ago. And I wrote it in quite a few different formats or genres and so forth, and finally became very comfortable with the way I decided to tell the story.
Mm-hmm. Now, I did mention that it recently won an award, and that had to be very exciting for you. Right. It maybe has won more than one. I'm very aware of the Spur Finalist Award. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that? And I also want to know how you were notified.
I am very, I'm just so thrilled and honored to, the Spur Award has a winner in different categories, and then they have finalists. And I don't think they always decide how many finalists. There's two finalists this year. I was in the category of contemporary Western, which is kind of interesting. I went back, you know, I knew it fit in that category, but so it's contemporary, and one of the criteria for to be in that category is that the story or the novel would take place after 1940. Concept of and I entered it months ago. I entered my novel months ago, back in the summer, and I always knew it was out there. And the reason, I mean, I've known about Spur winners for a very, very long time, and know a couple of Spur winners, and I'm just really honored that it has some sort of recognition in the Western genre, because I was hoping that it would be, I wanted it to be authentic and in that big body of genre.
Yeah.
But I was notified. I was on vacation. My husband and I had gotten away on a vacation a couple of weeks ago, and we were sitting on a beach on Maui, and I got a call from the chairman of the Spur Awards. I picked up the phone, and anyway, so it was really thrilling to be told that too.
That is so cool. So you had a phone call. That is so cool. And did you say, is this for real?
What I didn't argue with him, but I was, because I recognized his name. So.
Okay, right.
You know, sitting on a beach in Maui is okay.
Yeah, right? Yeah. That's another thing we've not done yet. Well, and I think that it's so interesting about that category, because when you say Western to somebody, you know, for many people, it's a strong word. It's something will come to mind. Yes. And it'll be something different for everybody. I mean, and it might, they might actually want to, you know, turn around and run because they don't know anything about, you know, or they'll have a warm feeling because they enjoyed reading a certain author that's known as a Western writer, whatever. It could be a Longmire story, or it could be of course, Louis L'Amour and Zane Grey are the two that are always sort of held up as the old, you know, where it all kind of starts, more or less. But to win in this category and to be able to say, yes, it is actually a Western, and help us expand the audience for Western and expand, you know, what it often is for Western, I think. And I hope we didn't just lose you. I saw that we just left for a moment. Are you still there?
I'm still here.
Okay. If that happens, and it can happen occasionally, if we freeze, you just keep on talking. If you freeze, we just keep on talking. And it always sort of seems to catch up okay.
Okay, very good.
Let's see. So your immediate reaction when you took that phone call, I'm assuming you were somewhat over the moon, were you?
I was just thrilled. It's, you know, you mentioned Longmire, and Craig Johnson has won, you know, a spur and so forth. And actually, I was reading his newest book on vacation this time. But anyway, just to be, I was hoping to, I'm not a rancher myself. The novel is in large part about the ranching community, community and so forth. So, you know, you just want to get things right. And you want to me, when I'm writing anything, the first thing, I mean, so many things come into play, but the first thing that I have to know and I have to feel like I can capture is a sense of place.
Sense of place.
I want people I'm always hopeful that a reader not only can get involved in my story and the experience of the story, but they know where they are. Mm-hmm. Now, some writers, you know, the story could take place anywhere, but this story couldn't take place any place but, you know, where it is. And the setting's very important. So it was just exciting to me because of the body of work that so many people who write in the Western genre have, which I joined with one novel. So.
Mm-hmm. And you talked just a moment ago about anchoring to location. And I think as I read the book, I felt that it was very character driven. But I understood, even though we're not ranchers and, but we've read enough and listened to enough poetry and music from Western music, from the Western music world, that we get a glimmer of what that terrain is like and what that life is like. Right. And I felt that as an author, you were really helping us to understand the ruralness. And when you say 40,000 acres, 50,000 acres, most of us, you know, who have neighbors encroaching on both sides of our houses, it's like bigger than our minds, you know, take. And I felt that you did you really helped us understand the location that this is set in. I know we're going to have you say something about that.
when we moved back to New Mexico, and there were two concepts that I became aware of as, you know, we had been back a few years before I was writing something else and I decided to take on this project. But there were two kind of concepts, cultural concepts, that I became aware of. And you'll be familiar with all of the reading you've done with these two. But one was this concept of, in this part of the country that I was living in, that neighboring meant something different than any place else I had lived. That neighboring meant something. Mm-hmm. And then the other concept, and I don't think of them as being in conflict with each other, but juxtaposed kind of, is that concept that sometimes people will say it's the part of the code of the West, which is Westerners take care of their own. Mm-hmm. And when you really take those two concepts apart, they're opposite urges, they're opposite cultural constructs. And so those two things interested me, you know, and you're right, Bobby. I mean, character is everything to me too. I don't know how, but those became part of, mm-hmm. I think, every of the story of the character of the place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's interesting when you say we take care of our own. You know, this is an example where we did not take care of our own. You know, we kind of, that was a hollow statement. You know, you get several references there, and one in the action about the second chapter is we. Mm-hmm. Just who is we?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, this novel I know that people who've read my work over the years and so forth, they always say, boy, you ask a lot of your reader, and I do. And so I really appreciate every reader I have, but my novel's written in 11 points of view, 11 actual 11 different points of view that a chapter will be headed mm-hmm. up with that character's point of view. And hopefully they mesh together. It's also told in a couple of timelines. Mm-hmm. So, but with the points of view, one of the points of view, and it was important to me from the very beginning, but it wasn't always structured that way, is what, and Bobby and Jim happened on, is this we point of view. And I don't tell the reader, and I don't really, like when I was working to publish this book and so forth, I didn't specify this is who the we is. But I came to think about the we as being the bigger community of and then in the hopes, and I don't like to like boss my reader around, but in, but in the hopes that the reader, with the thought in mind that the reader would become part of the mm-hmm. we. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at one point, it's hard to describe this when people haven't read it, but at one point when I wrote the novel in a different kind of format and a different genre, was always a Western, but working title was Blameworthy. And that concept of blame would include that the community felt responsible.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
With this we point of view. And not only does the we have their own chapter, but the we speaks in each one of the other chapters.
That's true.
Yes.
That's
true. And when I made the reference to sometimes I felt my cheeks burning was because I'm part of the we. And something I've just, you know, had something revealed to me, or that I realize I'm part of that. As the reader, I'm part of that we community.
Right.
There's a whole chapter that you have. It's a very short chapter in the book. It's early in the book, and it's just called We. Do you want to say something about it before I read it?
And thank you for reading it, Bobby. It is, as I was saying, the book has two different timelines, and each chapter has a date too. So the book begins with the end. The book isn't necessarily a mystery. You know, in the first chapter, that a murder has taken place,
right?
I would say. And that's in July of 2002. So the we chapter that Bobby Jean's going to read is July 5th of 2005. And it is it follows the first chapter, which is where a murder has been discovered.
We, July 5, 2005. At supper time, we started hearing it. Trouble up at Bounty Canyon Ranch. Two Lincoln County Sheriff vehicles and at least three New Mexico State Police cars had turned off the highway and headed up. Some of us saw the dust clouds they kicked up, leaving us thinking, not my fault, I'm not the bad guy here. We were all part of it. All knew it had been brewing a long time. Trouble is, we'd seen it coming and stood by watching it the way we'd watch a dry storm approach across flat land, always thinking we had more time. Someone had been hurt bad up there at the Bounty Canyon Ranch because the state murder team had been called in. If the Lincoln County Sheriff's Department called in a K-9 unit for a foot search, it never got reported. But at our supper tables, we were taking calls, making calls, as we scrapped half-eaten dinners off plates for yard dogs. What had we expected? We'd been privy to a lot of bad stuff about Luke Pruitt. We'd known his dad, Peyton Pruitt, who'd started out fresh, even got a big deal foreman job, but all turned out despicable. We had to wonder if Luke Pruitt even ever had a prayer. Sure, back in the 1990s, we'd read Luke's mom's columns in the Ranching Weekly, posted them on our refrigerators. We'd eaten up her ranch wife humor about her husband, Peyton, and her boys. She wasn't a careless writer, so we sensed most of what she wrote was written through gritted teeth. Maybe somewhere in her weekly missives, she'd put God's honest truth. We should have caught it, because neighboring is what we do in the Hondo Valley. Then Luke was back in the valley working over his own young son with a rope, calling the boy a pussy and a faggot. We had known in our guts that nothing was right on the Bounty Canyon Ranch. Summertime was the worst. Now, as the sun set in the valley, the glow was lifting from beyond the hills, making us feel foul. Our fault, cowards, all of us. We weren't going to escape the story. Blind Eye, Chapter 2, from the pen of our featured guest, Martha Burns. riveting prose, for sure.
Thank you. Thanks for reading that, Bobby. Yeah.
I'm going to take a short break that our readers and listeners will be able to find out, Martha, where they can get your book. Here is a short spot from Out West Shop's affiliate bookshop.org page. Stay tuned. Don't go away. Story is everything. Find a great one on Out West Shop's bookshop. Go to outwestshop.com. Find books and CDs on the menu. Choose Shop Out West on bookshop.org. Browse through featured authors on Rendezvous with a Writer. Explore curated book lists and our featured picks. Add in note cards, calendars, and jigsaw puzzles. One-stop shopping for great gifts. Use the search box to find thousands more titles. Make the switch. Your purchase supports us as independent booksellers. That's our story.
Welcome back to Rendezvous with the Writer with special guest Martha Burns. We're just here talking about Blind Eye and quite a story.
Yeah, quite a story. We've already talked a little bit about ranches, but I thought we know that a lot of this story, Jim, as you put it, it's about abuse, and it's about a community turning a blind eye to that. Do you want to talk maybe a little bit about some of the major characters and a little bit about them, how they spoke to you and how you got them on a page?
Well, you know, I'm so fond of my characters, and in this novel, I felt a lot of responsibility for the boy who is at the center of the story. And he doesn't have a point of view. He doesn't tell his story until very late in the novel. And I felt responsible for him. And the way I dealt with that responsibility was in discovering characters who come to me. I mean, a lot of this story, because it was inspired by events, I knew I needed a sheriff, and I knew I needed his parents and so forth. But quite a few of the characters are just whole cloth, and they're to help tell the story. that I'm very fond of and that I still continue to think about. There's a couple of characters. They don't have an actual point of view chapter, but there's a little coffee shop, a little restaurant down the road from the ranch where this crime is committed. And it's about 10 miles in off the highway, but the coffee shop's there on the highway. And there's a woman there that runs the coffee shop, knows all the people that come in and out. But she has two daughters who have shortly after birth had encephalitis, had water in the brain. And they're Melissa and Melinda. And I adore those two. Mm-hmm. Women. I just adore them.
Yeah.
And but anyway, so many of these characters get a chance to have a voice. And of course, it's difficult to have a major character. One of the characters has one of the most points of view. He does have the most point of view chapters is the father of the boy.
Mm-hmm.
Luke Pruitt.
Luke.
Mm-hmm. And so I knew that had to have compassion for my, you know, in the Western genre and so forth, we oftentimes have a bad guy and so forth, but he had to be, there had to be some sort of compassion for them. He was, you know, he tells most of the story, but I enjoyed writing about him. I enjoyed mm-hmm. writing about his relationship with his mother. Mm-hmm. There's so many characters, you know, there's 11 points of view, but also I at one point counted because I realized how much I had asked of my readers, and there's 64 named characters. 64.
Oh my God.
Now that does include, I draw on other works of fiction and whether it's Robinson Crusoe or Billy the Kid, because this is Billy the Kid country.
Yes, Lincoln County.
Lincoln County, yeah, true. Billy
the Kid. And you know, our guest next week is Melody Groves with her Spur winning book on Billy the Kid. we didn't like plan it that way, you know. But
I've been reading. I've been reading about her, and we have read some of the reviews.
Yeah. Anyway,
have any of your characters surprised you? Have you had control of them? Do they kind of slip away?
Are they demand to be written in?
They do surprise me because they come to I. This sounds like it's all about, you know, like I'm full of myself, but the kind of writer I am when I'm really involved in writing, I can be standing in line in the grocery store, and I am, you know, there's some sort of an activity of writing, but it's visualizing a scene. So it's, they could be saying something to me, but it's more that I kind of see them in the, you know, the twins I mentioned, they're busy making burritos every day. You know, they're at their job.
Right.
And I can kind of see them, but they do come alive, and hopefully they come, you know, you just want them to be real to you.
I liked Lark.
You know what? I like Lark too.
I liked Lark.
She's a small player.
Well, that's okay. You can be a small player and still be very important.
Yeah, she does have a small part.
Yeah.
She does. So.
Yeah. I would like to meet her. Go ahead.
One of the key players, other than Leland, our young man, is with Linda Pruitt.
Yes, and we liked Linda.
Which was his grandfather, grandmother. Actually.
Right.
And she was a pretty strong woman. And she wrote a lot of quotes for Ranchers Weekly that appear on the beginning of each one of the chapters.
Yeah, right. Articles. Right. Yes, tell us about when you developed Linda and as a writer and about what she writes.
I'm glad that that we're talking about Linda because, as I said, you know, it was inspired by an actual event in New Mexico in the Hondo Valley. And Linda Pruitt is based on an actual, you know, woman. And she, the character she's based on actually wrote a, you know, like a features column in a publication called Livestock Week. Sometimes I forget my own fiction, but she wrote for Livestock Weekly that it is published out of San Antonio. And she didn't write every, she didn't appear every week, but she appeared at least once a month from about 1990 to 1995. So when I started doing research, I did a whole lot of research about the area, about the underlying story and so forth. And I was at a library in Ruidoso, New Mexico, and the reference librarian was helping me pull old articles and everything. And she called to my attention these these features that Linda, you know, kind of a, you know, we've all read these kind of things.
Yeah.
And you might cut them out of the newspaper and post them on your refrigerator, that kind of thing. And she wrote a piece called, she her column was called Views from His Better Half. And so I was able to find a couple of her old articles from the 1990s. And then I reached out to the publisher of that weekly. And, you know, they do all these, you know, it's for livestock, for selling livestock and so forth. I don't know how you read all those commodities or anything like that. But they always have a beautiful picture of a cow or a horse or something on the front.
Sure.
That magazine. So, or that publication. Anyway, I reached out to him and told him I was interested in this family and this woman and her columns. Mm-hmm. He said, I've got them all on disc or whatever.
Wow.
I'll email them to you. And he emailed me every single one of her columns. And I must've had a stack of, you know, this. And it was like this Western wisdom and authentic and language. And just if I were to write again about some of these people, it would, it might be Linda that I would want to write about. So I you know, I told him that I would probably be writing fiction, and he said, you can use them. And I said,
good.
And I was always kind of like worried. And he said, Monica, they're yours. So as Jim said, in the point of view chapters that are told by a character, each one is headed up by a snippet. And believe me, I had my choice of wonderful little
quotes. I bet you did.
And anyway, I'm indebted to her.
Yeah.
To her words.
Well, and I think that it did for the reader also brings another point of authenticity to the story, because we're all aware of something like that in our local, even hometown, and because it's dealing with ranching and the rural life, you know, it just felt very like, oh yeah, this is what the community, this is what the we is reading. You know, they go to the post office and they go to the school events and they go to that Baptist church in town, perhaps, and they go to that coffee shop. And this is where this is what they eat and see and read. And this is the heartbeat of that community.
Right, right.
So it was really a wonderful additional piece to put in, I think.
And you know, when you read something like that on a regular basis and you wait to see what their column is and so forth, you feel like you know that person.
Uh-huh.
And at least that was, you know, my experience. So
sure.
I was really gifted with that.
Yeah. I'm looking at the time. Let's see. We're going to, Sam, we're going to have a very short Out West shop spot. And then when we come back, Martha, let's talk a little bit about maybe how you found Atmosphere Press and move a little bit into tips for writers. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
Here at the Out West Shop, we're passionate about the American West, the truth and the myth. We're purveyors of fine Western goods. We scout for unique and distinctive apparel, accessories, home decor, and general merchandise that are a reflection of the Western lifestyle. We hunt for unique artisans and craftsmen who are inspired to create decorative art you can wear based on their own love for the story of the West. we round it up and bring it to you. Check out OutWestShop.com when you need anything Western.
Welcome back to Rendezvous with the Writer with our special guest, Martha Burns. All right.
I was just checking to see if anybody was watching us on Facebook, but it's too distracting. So I'm back.
That's what you were doing.
Well, I was looking at the other laptop because anyway, it doesn't matter. We don't want to take time away. So do you have some questions
Yeah,
how did you find your publisher? Or how did they find you?
Well, I found them. Quite a few years ago, when I was still living in New Jersey, I went back to graduate school, and one of my professors, my first writing professor ever in my whole life, made such an impact on me and so forth. But then a couple of years ago, I had been looking for a publisher for Blind Eye for a while and put it on, all these writers have these stories of, set it on a back burner and continued to write. But anyway, I got a note from this professor. He's back still in New Jersey and or New York. And he said, I've just published a book, and sent me a postcard about it. And sure enough, it was with Atmosphere Press. Ah, so One of the first things I did is we have wonderful independent bookstores here in Santa Fe. And I went down to my favorite local bookstore here, Garcia Street Books. And I said, I'm just curious. Is this something you could order? Is this available? Because if it's not available, it's, and they ordered it right for me and so forth. And one thing led to another, and I got some advice from him and so forth and reached out to them. And I couldn't be happier. It was, it was a collaborative experience.
Yeah.
So just lots of young people, and then they're what's called these, what I've learned. I mean, I've learned so much since I got published with them, but they're a hybrid publisher.
Okay.
And they've just taken my second novel. So,
yay! I know you were working. Yay! That's exciting.
So,
book number two coming soon. Or however, whenever. tell us a little bit about when you write. Do you have a favorite place that you like to write in? Is a certain type of day? Tell us a little bit about your function of writing.
Well, I like to write in a coffee shop. And whether it's in New Jersey or where we lived for many, many years, and then when we moved back to New Mexico, when we moved to La Luz, I had a coffee shop, and I didn't have a coffee shop, but I had a coffee shop I went to, and that's where I can just I like the noise. I like the I'm not distracted. I'm probably not seen as very friendly because I'm not there to talk to anybody. I'm there. So, and there's a coffee shop right down the street from here, in Santa Fe, and that's where I get my best writing done. But I am not prolific by any means, and I'm not fast. Mm-hmm. And I write first draft by hand.
You
write every day or every other day?
Don't write every day. I wish I would not be honest if I said that. Yeah. But when I'm involved, when I get going, then I try to write every day.
Okay.
And pretty much in the middle of the day, then I write every day, but I don't have that discipline.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So we're going to ask that writer's block question. So do you get it? And if you do, how do you get around it, over it, under it? And if you don't get it, what do you think about writer's block?
Well, I'm sure that it's real. My writer's anxiety or block or whatever is coming up with what I want to write.
Ah.
And until I have something that I want to write next, I'm beside myself, you know. And if I know what I'm going to write next or work on next, then it's like, okay.
That's nice.
But I fill in that blank time. I love to work with other writers, and I love to be critique part. I mean, I've been a critique partner with a couple of other writers for years, and I want their work. You know, I want to be working on their. I'm unhappy if I don't have something to write, and I don't have something of theirs.
Of theirs, yeah. How about? Have you got a good tip for new writers or people looking to find a publisher? Any guidance for folks out there that are writing?
You know, I'm always happy to share my experience, and some people say, you know, just keep at it. I actually have a lot of compassion for young writers who know they want to be writers, because boy, it's hard. And I had a whole different career. I mean, if this was built into my whole being as a, I can't imagine if I was trying to do it and I was 20. So I don't have much advice for that young person, because, oh, it's just so hard. And, but on the other hand, for young writers, to me, to work with other writers has been the biggest blessing and benefit.
Yeah.
You know, and even if I didn't have a, you know, a publisher at the time or whatever, working with other writers was has always added a richness to my life. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't imagine if I didn't have it in my life. Mm-hmm. So,
do you have a question? I'm looking at time.
How do
our listeners find you?
Oh, I do have, you know, I have a website. I have a great web designer here in town. All these things I had to learn these last couple of years, but it's MarthaBurnsWriter.com. You can find me there. And Blind Eye is widely available now, I'm happy to say. And
it's good.
Very exciting. And congratulations on the next. Can you share the title of the next book, or is that?
And it's completely different. It will not fall into the Western genre, no matter how it's defined. I'm sure. it's called Across the Narrows. And it in ways, it's a period piece. It begins in the 1920s in Brooklyn, New York.
Oh, cool.
And, you know, again, setting's very important to me. But it does move forward in time, too.
Yeah, great.
Well,
great.
As long as you live in Santa Fe, you're a Western writer to me. Because as long as the boots are on the ground somewhere in the West, you're Western.
Oh, well, thank you. And I am happy to be. So.
Well, we've been delighted to have you with us tonight, Martha. This has been really fun. Just stay with us while we kind of wrap up the show. Jim, do you have... Let's see. Oh, next week, next week, we already mentioned briefly, our author joining us next week is from Albuquerque also. This is a really, really interesting nonfiction book, Before Billy the Kid, The Boy Behind the Legendary Outlaw. And it did win, was a winner in the current 2023 Spur Awards. And we'll be talking to Melody all about this next week. And you got a couple quotes?
We have a couple quotes. This first one was from philosopher Henry David Thoreau. The mass of men lead lives of quiet desperation. And following, we have one from Linda Pruitt of Ranchers Weekly, who says, have you heard the words to one of the newer country songs? The words go like this, cause and effect, chain of events. Now, between you and me, I would call that life.
thank you once again, Martha, for being with us. Thank you to Alex Dormont and the Hot Texas Swing Band for the music that opens and closes the show. Thank you to Sam Hassan for everything he does for us here at LA Talk Radio. And
remember, every day is a great day out west.
Out west. We'll see you next week. Thank you.
You're listening to Rendezvous with the Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.